voice today, so you're gonna have to bear with me. And yeah, we're joined in studio by
Hi, I'm Sadie.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Julia.
Yeah, so we're super excited about this week's episode because today we are talking about public art on campus. So it's been this kind of topic was spurred by The Shadow, which is a new public art display on campus at UBC. So for those listeners out there who don't know what it looks like, you can go to our Facebook page. It's UBC Happy Hour. We posted a picture on our site. I'm sure a quick Google search would lead to The Shadow as well. But it was just finalized this week, and it's basically kind of the reflection or the shadow of a Douglas fir tree in kind of made of bricks outside of the nest at UBC. So it's really big. But we did an interview with Esther Shalev-Gertz, who is the artist behind The Shadow. So we'll let her explain what the art piece is. And then when we come back, we're going to be joined by Zach Vessera and Sam Dubois from the UBC to talk about The Shadow. And we're also going to be joined by Barbara Cole, who is the outdoor art curator here at UBC. And we're going to be talking about the controversies behind The Shadow, but also UBC's public art strategy in general. And then Julia did an interview with her friend, who is engaged in public art in the city.
Yeah, so that's Eleanor Arkin from Frieda and Frank.
Yeah, so we're really excited. So first up, we're going to hear our interview with Esther Shalev-Gertz, who is the artist behind The Shadow.
Hi, I'm Sadie.
I'm Amy.
Hello.
And we're joined today by Esther, who created The Shadow.
So welcome, Esther. Can you just tell us a bit about yourself and your artistic career, just to start off?
Well, I am an artist since many years, like more than 30 years that I do art, and most of my works are around how history around us is constructed, and who is in and who is out. My means of expression is photography, all new kind of media, be it 3D, video, art in public space, means like it's about what is the world around us today and how can we express it in different formats that we are confronted daily. So I don't do painting and I don't do sculpture in the classical way. I was born in Lithuania and I grew up in Jerusalem. I live in Paris since more than 30 years, and for the same length of time I'm also visiting BC, and I have a place on Cortes Island, and I spend my summers and sometimes my winters, and it's a big inspiration for my work. I exhibited in many places in the world, and I don't know if you are familiar. I had a big retrospective, be it in Jeux de Paume in Paris, be it in the Belkin Art Gallery or in Switzerland. And it would be nice if you would ask me what would you like to know more. A lot of my work is also about the portrait. It's a portrait. I think it's pretty interesting and magical that we are all different from each other. And the same is for the trees. And so this is how we get closer to the shadow.
So for our listeners, you are the artist behind The Shadow, a new art installation on UBC's campus. So what is The Shadow?
What is The Shadow? The Shadow is a shadow of a large Douglas fir. And what it shows the real size of a shadow of a real Douglas fir that used to grow on this premises many years ago. and not so many actually, let's say 100 years ago. I live in Paris, and here history is much older and vaster, and means today you can still see on the campus, not on the campus, but when you will walk from the campus down to the sea, you can meet some of those giants that are still there. And so this shadow is stopped. It's kind of etched into the plaza. And it's as if time stopped and allows us to see the size of it and to experience the size of this shadow. Because the shadow of this particular tree is, as we are, we are the history of, be it the shape of our parents, the way they lived their life, and the way we lived the life. The same with the trees. Each tree is different from another tree. The way they negotiate for the light with the trees around them, with the water, with the winds. And so I just wanted to express one of those portraits of this giant that used to live there. And so we are aware a bit of the history that was there. And I wanted it to be like the history of the tree, the portrait of the tree, not us and how the trees are included in our history, but more or less to see if we can comprehend it in a different way.
All right. So the shadow, this is designed specifically for the UBC campus. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yes. It is designed. It took me 2 years of research. Most of my work have a long or short time of research. In this case, it was fascinating, to be inspired by your geography and where the campus is. The campus is in such a marvelous setting, because everywhere almost you look, you see the sky around, you see the trees, and behind them is the sky. Usually you don't see that. It's because where you are geographical spot. And this also gave me this feeling of horizontality. When you walk on the campus, it's the same. You have the feeling you walk on a crescent. And it's a very beautiful inspiration. And I think that's why the work that came to me when I was thinking about what to do for the campus was a horizontal piece, and the absence of the object itself that will more or less make us think and imagine how this tree was many years ago and include its present in our life.
Yeah, the campus is truly beautiful. So what do you hope the shadow will contribute to the UBC community?
As I said before, I think it's about the awareness, what was there before. I think it makes us vaster when we include other entities and what we know about history, our history. We know that if the family of the and the friends and how we grow and how it become larger, and all this is something that is the very construction of our magic. And I thought when I live in Europe, right, here people don't even understand what does it mean, first growth tree. When I talk about BC and I say, oh, they are thinking about second time cutting, they say, what are you talking about? Because in Europe here, the trees are cut thousands of years. So there is not this enormous magical trees still around. And so I think this kind of special to just insinuate that we they are among us and we're among them It was for me a very beautiful thing to create for the UBC. As you say, it's a beautiful campus, and the campus is done also in a very nice way. The construction and the big walks that you can do, and I wanted also people to be aware on what we walk, because we don't even think. When we walk, we think much, as all the philosophers say, you always think when you walk. But we never see on what we walk, or we see it, but we are not aware. And I think that as we get into the vast numbers we are, where we don't know anymore how to construct our house, or all the world around us are constructed by other people that we we are not so aware of it. So for me, I let the tree be pixelized by the form of the pavers. So I could have asked to cut the pavers according to my drawing, but I didn't do that because I wanted to also give the pavers a participation in the construction of this image. If yesterday they would have given me another spot that would be grass, I would have done it from different shades of grass, and then the image would be pixelized in a different way. And so my work is a lot around participation. In this case, it's the materiality and the shape of the papers and the pace and the walks of the students and all the generation to come that will walk on it. And so I walked a lot on the campus. And what was nice, I'm now a specialist about your pavers, because it's very beautiful to see how the older pavers get older and kind of shaped, and by the walks of all those students that will remember. They will remember this beautiful campus. I once talked with a gardener in another campus in the States, and they said, we invest a lot in our gardens, and because this is the moment that people will remember that they passed here for a couple of years. And so it really was important for me that it will become a part of these memories that students will take away from them, especially the situation where the shadow is situated. It's situated next to the mount. And the mount is like a little mountain from nature that is still there, that left alone among all the architectural construction around it. And you can sit on the mount and look down at the tree, at the shadow, and it might inspire you.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was really interesting what you're saying about when people are walking, they aren't seeing, and so they could walk over this, and maybe they'll see it, and maybe they won't with the pixelation. So, yeah, there definitely are some people who maybe don't realize that it's a piece of art that they're walking on. So what kind of artistic value does this element of it's kind of being hidden in plain sight, what does that kind of add to the piece?
You know, it's like work in public space is a very tricky thing. If you do it in a museum or in a gallery, you know, you have the wall and or the floor. And, you know, it's a different setting where you know you go to see art. And I did quite a lot of works in public space. And for me, it was important that let's say that has a certain resistance to be consumed at one glance. So not that I did it deliberately. And I'm very happy and I'm thankful that this idea emerged in me in this setting by walking the grounds of this university. And this how it happened. The inspiration came while walking there. But I also know the BC, and I know the area for many years. So all these memories, I believe, are not only mine, are also other people. So unconsciously, we see things that sink in us. And for me, it was kind of really putting together these two elements and letting it be there. And slowly, you know, when you go and you climb a tree, you do not see the whole tree, but you know it. You know the tree. We know things. So when you connect between knowing and seeing, that is not revealed in one and has a resistance, it can open your imagination in a different way.
So earlier you also mentioned about the actual construction of the shadow. The shadow was designed by you, but it was physically set up by construction workers. So how did it feel as an artist to hand over the physical portion of the final work to others?
Yes. Well, in public space, most of the work and art in public space is constructed by professional people, be it like big monuments that you know. Actually, the artist does a smaller version in another material, hands it over to the factories that are realizing large sculptures in bronze that is specific knowledge, be it in metal, be it in this case, in pavers. And when I did the monument against fascism, that was a big column of 12 meters covered by lead, 1 meter by one, asking people to sign their name against fascism. We asked people to sign their name, and then the whole column was lowered into the ground to make access the material that is above us. And slowly the monument, this whole column, was sank into the ground because the idea was it is not a monument that will fight fascism, it's us. But we were helped by a team of workers that helped us. First it was constructed in a factory, then we needed a team of workers with heavy machines to help us lower it. And so those people worked with us for 8 years, and they were very happy, and we were very happy, and we became friends. What I like is collaboration. So I know that in a university, there's a lot of changing of students, and everybody is very, very busy doing their work and education. But in this case, we have this team that never did, they work with pavers all their life, but they never did this kind of work. And they were very happy to work with it. And I was, because I had to trust them. You know, as you see, we had to create special maps so they can know, because there's three colors of pavers, and we created with another firm of landscape architects that supervised it. And they had to be precise. So the design and that I created would be transformed into this plaza the way it should be. And so everybody collaborated to bring it to a very swift, it took less time because they were so happy to work on it. And you know, they worked during the winter and sometimes rain and everything. And I hope some student could talk to them because they were there. I was in the beginning. So, you know, I think it was a very beautiful collaboration, and I'm so thankful to them. I'm thankful to the people from the Belkin Art Gallery that trusted me and this idea and helped me during all this time, the curators and all the people there. And I am more than happy to be also in the vicinity of this amazing nest that you have there, that also was done by, the idea came by an architect, and of course it was constructed by workers, as all the staff around us. So I think it's by chance, I'm very lucky to have this, the mount, the nest, and the shadow be together.
Definitely. So I have one more question for you. A number of students are upset about the cost of the work of art. Is there anything you would like to say to those students?
You know, everything in the world costs. You know, I don't know how much the nest cost or a bench cost. This project, as projects of public space, wasn't at all expensive because, luckily, the plaza was there. Say, if we had to make the plaza to put there, it would be much more, like way, way more. So you see, everything cost, and anything on this campus cost much. I don't think the students are obsessed by any other kind of cost of any other thing. All the beautiful benches they sit around or anything around them, everything has a cost. I don't know why they are obsessed by the cost and not the idea. I would love to talk with them about the idea. And I will be in UBC in April. After opening an exhibition in Toronto, I'll be there 9th and the 10th, and I am more than happy to talk with the students. We made several talks around this piece. One I talked and one the curator, Barbara Cole, talked about an open talk. We had many people come. We had 5 students come. So I am more than happy to talk with the students and really walk them through what does it mean to have an idea, to trust your idea, to realize your idea in the way the idea asks you to do that, and then hand it to the world. And means like that there is, everybody has to also, there's a lot of people that think about it, and most of the money, all the money, all the funds come from outside of the university. So I'm a little bit surprised that it's only the money that is there, but I understand, of course, the consideration. But this is like a donation. All the other artworks that will be there and are there are more or less done in the same way, I think, or will be done. There's a whole procedure around it that I'm not the specialist. I think it's beautiful that you have the Belkin Art Gallery and all the other museums on campus. You have one of the most amazing museums in the world that is the Anthropological Museum. So all these places of art is only for inspiration that is around your studying.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I'm a really big fan of The Shadow, so it was amazing to talk to you.
Yeah, I think this interview has really, it's kind of opened my eyes to it a lot more, and it makes me appreciate it a lot more. And hopefully it'll do the same for other students, that they'll appreciate the idea a lot more after listening to this.
Thank you very much, and enjoy The Shadow.
Stressed lately? UBC Yoga Club is here to offer you a peace of mind. Come out to any of our 17 weekly classes running 7 days a week, ranging from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. We have a class to accommodate your needs and abilities. Check us out at ubcyogaclub.com.
La Fondation canadienne pour le dialogue des cultures présente son nouveau projet Baldwin et La Fontaine vers le gouvernement responsable. Apprenez en famille, entre amis et à l'école sur l'engagement de ces deux personnages importants dans l'avènement du gouvernement canadien tel qu'on le connaît aujourd'hui. Visitez le site baldwinlafontaine.ca pour y découvrir des capsules vidéo, des documentaires et un guide pédagogique. Participez au concours national en ligne pour courir la chance de gagner un voyage à Toronto pour 2 personnes ou une bourse d'études postsecondaire.
Okay, so we are back on UBC Happy Hour, and you just heard Amy and Sadie's interview with Esther Shalev-Gertz, who is the artist behind The Shadow, which is UBC's newest public art installation. So we're back in studio with Julia, myself, Alex, Sadie, and Amy, and we also have 3 new guests in the studio with us that we're really happy to introduce. So first we have Zach.
Hi, my name is Zach Vassara, and I'm a senior staff writer for the UBC who was involved in covering The Shadow when it first came to light or gained attention on campus.
Yeah, thank you, Zach. And?
Hi, I'm Sam Dupois. I'm the culture editor at the UBC. Yeah, and I'm sort of his boss, I guess.
Yeah, kind of. It's not really a clear relationship at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. And lastly, we have Barbara Cole. Thank you.
Hi. Yeah, Barbara Cole. I'm the curator of the outdoor art collection here at UBC.
Thank you. And we're so excited to have you on the show with us as kind of the expert behind all of this. And I think you can offer such a good insight into this and also into public art on campus at large.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Zach, do you want to maybe start us off with, like, what is The Shadow?
How did it go down? Let's break it down. Sure thing. Okay. Well, we will have to start with Esther Shalev-Garretz, who's an artist who, of course, is originally from Lithuania, but has created art and lived across the world, New York, Paris. She has installations in Germany, Sweden, you name it. Very renowned artist who, in 2013, I believe, did an exhibition at the Belkin. From there, a partnership emerged where it was planned that Esther would create a new project for UBC campus entitled The Shadow. And if you go to UBC, you've seen The Shadow because it's quite big. In fact, it's a massive structure across the plaza in front of the Nest that basically simulates the shape of a Douglas fir tree through a bunch of very specially made bricks with a special dark pigment, creating the impression of a shadow that can be viewed from afar or from a higher position. The Shadow gained a lot of attention in, I want to say, later October for its cost. It cost $365,000, not taken from student tuition, it should be noted, but from a special development fee that is charged on developers and people building on campus. That being said, whenever you say something has a price tag, people tend to get very excited about it, especially when it's being constructed in public space. So to this day, I think there are many misconceptions about how The Shadow was funded and why it was built that have kind of affected its image in some respects. But there it is outside the Nest on the plaza, readily constructed.
Yeah, so Sam and Zach, you guys have been covering The Shadow a lot in the UBC. So what have been student reactions to this? There's been a lot online, a lot of talk about this. I feel one of kind of the most like talked about subjects on campus this week, even since it kind of started.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so what have been kind of some student reactions?
I don't think I've seen this much opinion on art on campus ever, at least in my time as culture editor. It's frustrating to still see on your Facebook feed people posting the same meme about, you know, $365,000 in the photo of The Shadow. But it's been very outspoken. And I would say, unfortunately, more on the negative side, but that has a lot to do with misinformation about the finances.
I think what happened with The Shadow is a very classic example of embedding, sort of. And part of that actually is the fault of the UBC, because we did run an op-ed letter that was drawing attention to The Shadow with kind of a negative spin on it, and it did claim that the money was coming away from student tuition or implied that the money could be spent elsewhere. In fact, the nature of this development fund that was used to fund The Shadow is that it could only be put towards community projects like public art. The only other thing it could really have been spent on would be, for example, sewage and drainage systems, where the money isn't needed right now. So it's kind of funny to me, because if the money had been spent on a sewage system, he would spend, you know, that almost $400,000 on a sewage system. Students would not care, because no one has an opinion on how much a sewage system should cost. But because you spent that money on public art, suddenly everyone's a public art expert and has a very strong opinion on how that money should have been spent and how they could have saved money, et cetera, with very little background knowledge. I think it's also important to stress out that the student kind of this negative reaction to The Shadow also came with very limited actual engagement. Yes. Esther was on campus in November, and she did make a very public statement in the UBC article. And I think there was public word from the Belkin Gallery that, please come to this talk, engage with the artist, tell us what you think before construction begins. And I think I was one of maybe, frankly, Barbara, five students in the room, you would say. Yeah, so there not many students actually came out to speak about The Shadow in the end. Yeah.
I also think it's interesting that even today, we're not talking about the art piece and the idea, as Esther mentioned in her interview, but just the cost. And what does that say about UBC students just being kind of what their values are and engaging when they engage with art in their campus?
Yeah, it's definitely disappointing, considering that we're all educated to be critical thinkers who analyze and think academically, that we've kind of reached a point where the main discussion is finances, which is it doesn't fit into the spirit, I think, of the university. And it would be much more interesting, frankly, if we were all talking about it as a work of art and not a construction project. I think that we could have very, very interesting and engaging discussions that talk about just concept, just the point behind it. And no one really wants to do that. And to Zach's point, the engagement on that front is so low, which it just doesn't really fit with what you expect from a university community.
Yeah, or perhaps it's just like a reflection of the context that we're living in, mm-hmm. in a place where the tuition costs are rising and rising, and we see a lot of architecture and construction going on. So there's a lot of confusion about what finances are being like catered towards. And I feel like one thing to like with like conceptualism, it's the whole idea. There's an idea that you have and then you put it on, but whatever happens is what happens, right? So mm-hmm. in that sense, maybe it wasn't supposed to be some art piece to talk about finances, but that's where we have been led to by the students and the voices. So then it really does speak to a lot of students, I believe, because maybe this number is not a big deal for a public installment. And I would like to ask how much usually public installments would be about. But.
Well, they can really vary. Mm-hmm. Hi, everybody. It's Barbara. That can really vary, but I think... you know, what this is reminding me a little bit of is, you know, it's the dead of the summer. There's not a lot of news going on. And that's often when we'll see articles in newspapers about public art. And unfortunately, or even on the TV. So, you know, somebody puts a mic in somebody's face and said, do you think this is worth $200,000? And then what are they left to say? So I think the question is, well, how do we change that question? How do we, as journalists and as people involved in the arts, how do we change that initial question to be, what do you see? What do you see here when you're looking at this? Tell me what you see and the context that it's in. Can we have a talk about that? Can we have a discussion about that?
I think generally these days we talk so much about reading that kind of literacy and being aware of when facts are presented, but something that's not taught is visual literacy and being able to read an image, whether it's on a computer or a work of art in a museum or something like The Shadow. Mm-hmm. It's not mm-hmm. standard in curriculums.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point in that I think the value of art in public space is that it is in the public realm. It's in our space. It's in the space that we believe to be ours. That's the place of democracy. That's the place where we have the freedom to express ourselves. And it really does represent the everyday, the familiar, but also the remarkable. Art in public space is always, hopefully, a contentious space that we care about deeply. It's also a place, I think, where I lost my train of thought.
That's okay. So one point that came up yesterday, and we've been talking about this a lot in CITR this week. I feel like The Shadow has like been in my dreams because we've been thinking about it so much. It's haunting me. A point that someone brought up yesterday in CITR, which I think maybe we could all answer, but I think Barbara, you might be the best person to answer this as the curator of outdoor art on campus, is someone brought up the point of, you know, should universities kind of be the site of artistic experimentation when it comes at a high cost? And so, you know, I think that was kind of an interesting point. I mean, I think that universities are sites of experimentation in and of themselves. But, you know, I think that, like Julia was saying, it is a reflection of our capitalist educational system. And so that it leads to kind of maybe anger when money is spent in places that students don't necessarily understand why they're being spent there, if that's the case. I'm just wondering how UBC approaches artistic experimentation on campus and how this campus is used as a site of experimentation in arts.
The university is really a place of curiosity, of exploration, and as you say, of experimentation, of research. I think it would be really sad if there wasn't any vestige of that within contemporary art practice. And certainly in the direction that the outdoor art collection is going in is much more a process similar to Esther's, in that you select an artist. That artist then goes through a period of research and develops the project over time in relation to the context of the university. So research is really something that's valued, and then what you see from that, the vestige of that, is very public. So it's not necessarily a book in the library or anything that might be a little bit harder to see. It is in public space. So it adds to our perception of that public space.
If I can hop on that as well, and excuse me, I'm about to go full arts major on everyone. I think the university really is a microcosm of society, and society involves politics, and politics involves art on some level. Art in universities is nothing new historically when you think about it, at least in the European context. Art was being created in like large universities, usually religious colleges, and then hoarded there, where only people privy to that university could see it. Now here at UBC, in a public university, where we're in a model where university is more accessible and like lots of people have the chance to go to school who wouldn't normally have had in the past, art is public. Art is easily available to everyone. Anyone can go and look at the shadow, whether or not they are even a UBC student. I think there's something special and important about that. And I think, frankly, that anyone who's arguing that you can take a university and distance it from the idea of art in any sense of the word is kidding themselves and living a little bit too far in the past for my comfort. Yeah.
Yeah, I wholly agree with that. I interviewed an architecture prof 2 weeks ago, and he was saying that you always have to think about UBC in terms of that it is run as a business, and they're constantly thinking about costs versus gains. He was talking about it in a different context, but the sentiment definitely is there that it's about efficiency and it's about allocation of funds to places that yield a good return. Having been a visual arts student in my first 2 years, I definitely felt the feeling that I was not necessarily receiving the best that UBC had to offer in terms of funding or even attention. You're tucked away in a pretty small and very old building. You're not receiving any money for supplies, things like that. And having seen how art schools, like dedicated art schools, ran, it was very disappointing, I think. It definitely reflects a sentiment, which is, I think, very prevalent in the university, where you see massive science buildings, engineering buildings, and you feel that all of this is being pumped into very prestigious departments and faculties. And then there's arts. And I think that especially when public art is not as accessible, that feeling only increases. And it's actually kind of refreshing, regardless of what you think of the shadow, that art is represented so strongly, at least in one way, on campus.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like with art, when people are able to engage with it more and have contact with it, it mm-hmm. has a lot more meaning because it could create a sense of community, right? So personally, when I look at this big shadow, it's very impressive. But when I walk through the plaza, I see a lot of people scurrying on the sidelines. And when I see that, it feels like this space isn't for people. This isn't mm-hmm. created for people to coexist. It's created for an idea to be inhabiting this space. Right. So in that sense, it's like the art becomes almost pushes people aside. And I feel like art could be very inviting in different ways. For example, mm-hmm. if you go to the Museum of Anthropology, there's this pole where they have these different hands that show gambling signs. And you can touch the hands and you can see, play along with them because they're hands. Right. So you have hands and you can play around with it. But with this tree, you have to go up somewhere really high. So if you never noticed that that was a piece of art, it just seems like something so distant.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's something.
I think one of the things about the shadow, I mean, I've heard the comments about only being able to see it from above. And I guess I would challenge that a little bit in that I think one of the things I love about it is that it has multiple levels of experiential quality to it. So there's the experience of walking up the trunk mm-hmm. And maybe not noticing it the first time, but maybe the second time you notice that now something's happening. The darkness is dissipating. There's more than one color. There's a very particular kind of rationale or intelligence around that. And then being at the top of the nest and looking out one day of actually starting to really understand what that image is. So there's multiple experiences and multiple viewpoints. And in so many ways, I think that relates back to how we understand the role of the university. So we're here, we're learning about different perspectives. So we might choose one subject, geography, let's say, but we're looking at geography from so many different points of view. So again, I think that the shadow is both appropriate for this place, but also within the context of learning and process. So I think one does eventually understand what that image is, but more importantly, the fact that it is not, you know, it is important that it's an old growth Douglas fir, but even more important, it's a shadow. And we all understand shadows, and that we all each live with shadows. Ours are different, perhaps, but we live with shadows. There's something that was there that is no longer, but it still, as you say, haunts us, right?
That's beautifully put.
Something that Alex and I were talking about with some other people was kind of the role of the shadow kind of in the historical context of the land. So many of the other public art pieces on campus have connection to the Musqueam people. And, you know, when talking with Esther, she mentioned in her interview that, you know, it connects back to the land and what was here before. And just kind of the role of, you know, a Westerner imposing art and kind of being a part of that dialogue with the Musqueam territory. Was there any kind of consideration when it was being commissioned about with that?
Yeah, that's that relationship I think is growing, and that certainly that consciousness is and sensitivity is growing. At the time, as I understand it, because it was prior to my tenure here, but the previous curator did contact Musqueam to ask about location. The location for the work in case there was any kind of sensitivity or anything that people should understand about that. Similarly, the same process was undergone with the sighting of the reconciliation pole. And in fact, with that, where it was to be originally sighted, it actually changed through their feedback about that proposed site. So what we're hoping to do much more into the future is to be able to, right from the very beginning, introduce the artists at Musqueam 101 and try to set up some sort of a relationship there so that the artists can learn from what that history was, the way that the land has been used and taken care of by the Musqueam for so long. So, yeah, into the future.
Might I ask, why was the decision made not to have a local artist produce the work as opposed to one who, though they've lived in Vancouver or British Columbia for some time or for periods, has no connection necessarily to UBC or to the area in general?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in the same way that it's not a requirement that all of the teachers that teach here are local. I think that there's a desire to learn from people of all cultures and from all places. But I also, you know, and really I think it's important to say that in Esther's interview she also mentioned the fact that she's been coming to BC for 20, 30 years. That she spends much of her summers on Cortez Island. So she has a very deep and powerful resonance with this place. But she also, I think, brings a different kind of perspective or a viewpoint to how she appreciates the campus. She finds it to be a really magical place, and maybe us who have maybe grown up and lived here might not see it in that kind of fresh way.
The other kind of component of that was that in most other aspects, UBC presents itself to the outside world by what it produces. You know, it's professors' innovations, professors' research and findings. And much of how we measure ourselves as a university is by what we are, what we produce from within. Do you think it's then strange to have put money, invest in a work of art that doesn't carry that same sentiment, as opposed to saying, here's a student or a professor who produces amazing artwork, and we've given them the opportunity to feature their talents in a public forum?
Do I think it's strange? No, I don't. I think the professors are really talented students here. I think they have every opportunity to produce work here. As I said before, I think the value, we don't set out necessarily to choose an artist from away. What we're looking for is an artist whose practice fits well with this context and situation, especially in the case of this notion of research. So artist practices who really embrace research, who are really comfortable with developing a concept over time and in conversation with others. I mean, that's a very kind of unique genre, or a particular genre, I think, of art practice. So,
maybe if I could quickly hop in here, I think an important distinction which Barbara just touched upon is the context and understanding of the location. And I want to make a brief comparison here with another public art piece that attracted a lot of ire in Vancouver, which is that 18th and Main. I don't know what it's called. It's the poodle. Yes, it is a giant white poodle on a stick. there were two complaints about it, kind of similar to this project. One was that the artist who made it is a Montreal artist, not a Vancouver artist. And the second, and this was the bigger issue, I think, was that for those of us who are from Mount Pleasant who are out there, you will know that a poodle on a stick does not represent that neighborhood. And no one from that neighborhood believes a poodle on a stick represents that area or its history. It felt arbitrary. It felt weird. Whereas the difference, I would say, with the shadow is that Esther did, to her credit, do some research on the area. It sounds like there was some talk with the Musqueam Nation, and she does have a connection to BC in some regard. So what I do get, and Esther has a history, I think, in her previous works as well, of evaluating kind of the political and social climate and picking something that she thinks suits it. So she brings her own opinion in, but she does, for example, of her installation, The Monument Against Fascism, she draws upon political themes existing in the place. So I do commend her for that aspect of the work.
Yeah. So thank you so much, everyone, for this discussion. We're going to have to wrap it up soon because my voice is dying slowly. And we're going to hear an interview from Julia. But I guess my kind of closing remark would be that the shadow, I mean, if public art is supposed to invoke conversation and provoke and make people think, I think that the shadow has most definitely accomplished that. And like we've said, the shadow has been the most talked about public art piece probably on campus ever. We would probably say, and maybe that's due to the nature of online communication that we're the kind of the world that we're living in now. But I think the shadow has been such an amazing point of discussion. And I think that love it or hate it, it's here to stay. So,
here we go.
Yeah. So Zach and Sam and Barbara, thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. I hope the discussion keeps rolling on.
Yeah, I think it will. It's been so talked about. And it's really interesting. So Julia, do you want to introduce the last interview?
So I have a friend who is just graduated from UBC 2 years ago, I think, from the environmental design. And she actually has set out around the city to develop and claim public spaces so that we realize, hey, let's try and contribute to public space. So it kind of relates to the public art that we are talking about right now. So we'll just go from there.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hello. We are here today with Eleanor Arkin. She is co-founder of Frieda and Frank. Could you give yourself a little introduction, please?
Okay. Hello, everyone. As Julia said, I'm a co-founder of Frieda and Frank, as with my partners Haley Roser and Renee Miles. And together we look at ourselves as urban catalysts looking to change people's perspectives on public space. And throughout the past year, we have been activating public space mostly through ping pong activation, so actively letting people participate in making a space active, and through giving an opportunity for play and connection. And one of our main goals is to combat social isolation and give people a reason to be outside and interacting with each other. So yeah.
Very cool. So, I mean, thinking about living in a city like Vancouver, being isolated, that seems like a very powerful statement. As activating public space. Do you think that when you have this intention of adding art to a public space, that there are some political implications?
I think no matter what, like, no space is neutral. It always has an implication, and that's why we like to work in mostly a temporal or ephemeral fashion, realizing that we don't want to make permanent changes to a space, and if you are to do that, that it, no matter what, will invite some people in or exclude others, and trying to make things as neutral as possible is also a goal, but sometimes that creates a blank space, and then we don't do anything at all, and people who are making the decisions are just implementing that onto others. And with that being said, we have done a project in particular, a mosaic piece in Strathcona, where we invited random people off the street, whoever happened to pass by, to participate in building the art piece itself. So having maybe like 40 to 50 people pass by and put pieces and feel like they have a sense of ownership and actually participate in making a piece of art come to life. So kind of taking ourselves away from that that process and allowing it to be owned by others as well. So again, kind of pushing against that top-down implementation of an art piece, which takes a bit more time and a bit more trust, but in the end makes it more worth it. So yeah,
it seems like people can have a associated memory if they're able to put in a little piece of a tile or something. That's really cool. But thinking about other ways that, instead of inviting people to participate in the art and to create it, are there other measures that you take to make sure that this public art is something that is very associated with the community? I'm just thinking, mm-hmm. The pop-up art that you had with the bubble, for example, and the jam that you had.
What do you mean? The measures that need to be taken, like in terms of making it happen or in terms of making it inclusive?
What are things that you keep in mind as you're doing these public art installations so that you feel that it is engaging the community?
I think in terms of that project in particular, it was coming from a particular place, and it had a certain intention and a specific message to talk about the metaphor of a bubble and to get people to push outside of their own bubble and their own comfort zone a little bit and to really talk about what public space can be and to imagine it through a different perspective. And I think no matter what, nothing's perfect, right? There's not going to be feel inclusive to everyone, and we're trying to push those boundaries by bringing in different programming and active conversation on what it can look like, and just I think providing a new opportunity of what can actually happen in public space. And of course, doing events like this takes a lot of effort and a lot of collaboration and bringing different people together to make something happen. But I think giving people a glimpse of the difference, the different things that can come to life in public space is really important. And really pushing on people's imaginations to realize that something can be there, you know, and can be interactive, and that people can, and it's for people. I think a lot of people don't realize that this stuff is for them, and it's for them to actively use and participate with, and that it's free. So,
For the audience that doesn't know this bubble project, could you elaborate a little bit more on that for me, please?
Yeah, so this was over the weekend. We threw an event underneath the Canby Street Bridge, and this was in collaboration with City Hive, which is all about engaging youth in city processes, and we run their public spaces team. So they did most of the organizing for this event, and we kind of act as coordinators and in coordination with the Vancouver Design Nerds, who have been developing the bubble idea for a really long time. We worked with the City of Vancouver, who originally funded our project throughout the summertime with the ping pong, and then also funded the bubble project. So it took a lot of coordination, and it was all about celebrating connection during the wintertime, and that was a project called Winter Action. So we also funded some other events around the city, but I think this event in particular the slogan was to get out of your bubble and come check out ours. And and like, I think providing an opportunity for people to meet each other and meet what we're doing, see what we're doing, is really important. And I think there's still a lot to work on. And I think no matter what, for us, it's a learning process. Like, nothing is concrete or fixed or permanent. It's a bubble. It pops. So, yeah.
Oh, that's so deep, this metaphor. That's so great. Thinking about this funding, recently on UBC campus, there has been this public art that has been installed. It's a Douglas fir, or shadow of a Douglas fir, that's in between the Nest and the Hebb building, I think is the right location of it on UBC. But there's a lot of controversy about the funding, and I was just wondering, they say that it's outside funding, but obviously, it seems like there's all kinds of ways that this funding can be used. And I was just wondering, first, what is the process like for getting those grants and those funds from outside for public art? And then, I guess, from there, we can dive into what we think of the public art at UBC.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it, a lot of this sort of work is grant-based, and it's through people supporting artists and people who want to activate space and giving opportunities for different people to come out. And usually the process is pretty lengthy. Like, you have to have an application, you have to have a solid idea, and I think you have to have, for a lot of people, you have to have recognition for doing prior events. So, I mean, the fact that we got a grant over the summer allows us to really push forward to applying for more grants. But I think giving out grants is a really great way to give opportunity to people to make something happen. And that's why for this Winter Action Project, we actually ended up giving out 7 grants. So giving away our own funds to make other small projects happen, rather than just hoarding it for ourselves and giving other people the opportunity to build up their own portfolio, because sometimes it's not as accessible. So I think that there are obviously multiple scales of grants and different types of applications you can apply for, but they are what keep these projects going. So,
well, it sounds like you're pretty, I don't know, almost like a full-time job applying for grants themselves. No, like,
definitely. And I think looking for proposals, looking for projects, but sometimes I don't know, and it's better to have a project in mind and then you create the resources to make it happen, mm-hmm. Rather than implementing an idea through a grant.
Then thinking about the public art at UBC, it seems like it would be quite inaccessible to a lot of students, but do you find that, or do you think for students, like, there are public what are some public pieces of art that you see on UBC campus that you're like, this was good, and this was a good way of using a grant?
Yeah, I think there are different, I mean, there's a lot of public art at UBC that students probably don't even notice. And I think some things that you can interact with and some things that are a bit more passive and are there just as an act of beautification. And sometimes it's hard to be able to access the meaning of it. I think that the recent totem poles added to UBC are really important and actually really beautiful, and I think that's an accessible way of learning about the context and the history of the land that people are on, because I think people come to the university from so many different places not really knowing about the history of the land of UBC itself, and kind of being like, I don't know, I'm not accessing like Aboriginal culture and Indigenous culture, but it gives an eye-opening perspective onto that. So I think those are really successful. And I also think that the Engineering E is a really interesting example where the students have taken their own initiative and their own kind of ritual in actively painting it over and over again. And that if you were to like cut through the E, you'd see these layers and layers of people passing through the university, and it's an act of participation. It might be just a silly, look like a silly, stupid little E, but for so many people that's an act of play and engagement and participating and being part of a legacy, right? So I think that's a really successful piece. And a couple of years ago, there were actually swings put up all around UBC campus by the School of Architecture and Landscape Architecture's dean at the time. Leslie Van Dusen? No. I don't want to get her name wrong. But they put up these beautiful swings throughout campus that were for students to use and enjoy and actually like hang out in the space. And I think creating projects, pieces that can people can actively use or participate or lounge on is such a, it actually gives back to student life. It's not something that is passive or just like a piece of art that, I don't know, makes them think a bit differently. It allows them to actively use it, and I think that there can be a balance of both, but allowing people to maybe even contribute from UBC would really liven the space and realize that as students they could participate in a legacy too. Mm-hmm. So, and I definitely, if given the opportunity while a student at UBC to work on a project, I think that myself and a lot of other students from either art or design background would jump on the opportunity, because it's an opportunity to really explore and build in actual space and see how it works. And experimentation is super important. And even on like the UBC website, they're like, oh, we encourage like exploration and experimentation in the public realm, but sometimes it's hard to necessarily see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But talking about the swings, you're totally right about being part of a community, you know, mm-hmm. and being able to talk to your friends to be like, oh yeah, like I went on the swings mm-hmm. too. Like you see a couple holding hands on them, and it makes it more that you're part of something rather mm-hmm. than just going through your everyday, which is something special that public yeah. art can do.
And so many times when you're a student on campus, you're just moving from place to place, and it just feels like the public realm is just a benign space that you move from thing to thing, and like not having an opportunity to just like let go and relax a little bit and like need to let that stress out, right? And feel like you're, I don't know, part of something, or seeing someone else smiling and like having fun on a swing, like just seeing that little bit like will actually affect probably the rest of your day without even realizing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just to conclude about public art, do you think you could recap on what your personal connection is with public art and what you'd like to see for future students, and what would be some encouraging words to get involved in the public space?
I think there are lots of things that I have to say about public art. I think that it allows us to look at a space differently. It allows us to actively participate. And even when I was a student on campus, I remember just running around and exploring campus and trying to find little things to actively entertain myself with. And, I don't know, opportunities to climb on things and, like, really play. And as adults and students, we begin to forget about the importance of play. So I would say creating pieces of public art that people can actively either participate and build together as a collaborative, or that you can enjoy and use in conjunction with other students. So I would say, as a former student who's now working in like the public realm, like always try and be cognizant of the people that might use it or see it, but just saying that, like, don't be afraid to also do it and to try and experience and explore, and that maybe something doesn't need to be necessarily permanent at first. Or if there are going to be permanent changes, like, base that off of small-scale interventions first and really understand what people want to see and have them actively participate in it, rather than having an artist from somewhere else just implement a design without coordinating with any students who are actually going to be using it and want to, I don't know, share that with the students that come through a space, because people are constantly moving and changing at UBC, and to see something that a prior student has actually built or done or, I don't know, transformed in the public realm, like, that's really special because it empowers them a little bit more. So I think public art can be really empowering. It can be really informative, and it can also make a place a little bit more exciting. So yeah.
Thank I don't you know. So much. No, no, know. It was yeah. wonderful. So
I swear to God, I'm not wearing just my underwear right now. Yeah. This is Beth. Hi, this is Beth Ditto from The Gossip, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. No, yeah, this is the best thing in the world. You guys are going to be blown away.
British Columbia is beautiful. We have lush rainforests, oceans of powder snow-capped mountains, flower fireworks in alpine meadows, and friendly people. Take a well-deserved break from studying and join us, the Varsity Outdoor Club, on a hike, trail run, rock climb, ski tour, or paddle trip. Trips start from $0, no experience necessary, just enthusiasm. Check us out online, ubc-voc.com.
Do you have an approaching test or exam and need help studying? Well, it's time to prepare yourself. The Study Van, www.studyvan.com, is a 100% free website dedicated to helping you achieve excellence. MCAT, History, Chemistry, French, Math, Biology, the Study Van covers it all. Tools are provided so you can create your own study group and do what you need to do. Ace your exam. The Study Van will help you help yourself. Give it a shot. You have nothing to lose, as once again, it's a 100% free studying resource. So remember, when you need to study, go to the Study Van, www.studyban.com.
Stew Stews, the stew for you. Do you do the stew that Stew Stews? Come find out at UBC Sprouts.
Located in the basement of the AMS Nest and on the penthouse of the GSS building, open weekdays 9 to 4:30.
UBC Sprouts is your home for cheap,
tasty,
organic,
local.